This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Thousands of French people hold a rally in Paris to protest against racism and police violence. New data shows the number of unaccompanied migrant children in the U.S. custody along the Mexico border has reached a record high. Thousands of French people have held a rally in Paris to protest against racism. Thank you for joining us. We're beginning our news bulletin with new data that shows the number of unaccompanied migrant children in U.S. custody along the Mexico border has reached a record high. According to a data reviewed by media, the government is housing approximately 15,500 migrant minors. That includes 5,000 in unsuitable conditions in border patrol facilities not designed for long-term custody. Hundreds of them were forcibly separated from their parents and put in what critics dubbed cages and sparked international outcry against the former administration. The government's records show that children are spending an average of 136 hours in border custody, well beyond the 72-hour legal limit. The administration of President Joe Biden is also facing criticism for the lack of transparency around the humanitarian situation in those facilities. For more on that, we're joined by Edward Corrigan, international lawyer, international human rights lawyer from Ontario. Mr. Corrigan, can you shed more light on the different aspects of this, the 72-hour limit and the 136 hours that on average children are spending in those facilities? What is the situation like on the border?
Well, the border's been overwhelmed. They're on the road for having more refugees coming from Mexico into the United States in the past 20 years. And, you know, the unfortunate reality is that Obama separated families and put children in, you know, isolated prisons, or what some people described as cages with subhuman standards. Then Trump took it to a whole new level and was terrorizing and terrifying people and targeting immigrants and calling them rapists and murderers and drug dealers and stuff, which scared away a lot of the potential refugees, and especially unaccompanied minors that were trying to improve their life and get away to safety. So now Biden has scaled that back a lot and says, we're not going to behave that manner. Now you've got a lot of unaccompanied minors and refugees coming to the United States, hoping to be able to access the country for better quality of life, for safer human rights situation, but also for better economic conditions for their family and their children in particular. So we have, you know, the system is overwhelmed. Biden administration is talking about flying minors to actually to the Canadian border, because there are some detention facilities there, but there are virtually no refugees coming from Canada to the United States at that point. If they are, they're covered by the Safe Third Country Agreement, which usually means that they can't make a refugee claim in the safe country that they transited through. So if they arrive in Canada, they must make a claim there unless they meet an exception. Same thing if they're in the United States, they can't come to Canada unless they make one of the close family member exceptions under the Safe Third Country Agreement. But the larger issue here is the economic relationship. You know, the North is generally rich and prosperous, partly because they plundered the Third World, and you have people that are desperate for an economic situation to try to improve their life. And then you've got, you know, situations like in Guatemala, where you know, the white minority is persecuting the indigenous, you know, majority Mayan population. You've got terrible circumstances in Haiti. You've got terrible, you know, human rights violations in El Salvador and in Honduras as well. And so you've got this big economic problem, which we keep looking away from and don't deal with it. But if we could solve the economic problems and be constructive in solving the problems in Central America, we would reduce these refugee flows dramatically. And we should stop trying to exploit the third world and rob them of their riches and, you know, dump all our problems on them and, you know, not pay their workers a decent living wage. And of course, if we're going to exploit mines and stuff, we don't care what the economic or environmental consequences are to the local inhabitants. So there's a bigger question here, which I think we need to address. But yeah, the American administration has been overwhelmed. Trump, I despise the man, but at least he did discourage refugees from coming to the United States because they figured it'd be better off staying in Honduras or Mexico than they would be for coming to the U.S. And that's the reality, and Biden has fixed that to a large extent. But now you've got this wave of refugees coming, and you know, there's these larger questions, but also it's just overwhelming the system.
Thank you very much, Mr. Edward Corrigan, international human rights lawyer out of Ontario. Moving on, hundreds of people have gathered outside the state of Georgia, the capital, actually, Atlanta, to support the Asian American community. The protest comes amid mounting violence against the Asian community, who are being blamed for the coronavirus crisis. The demonstrators carried posters bearing slogans denouncing discrimination against Asians. Two Georgia senators also took part in the rally. Earlier, U.S. President Joe Biden denounced the rise of hate crimes and violence against Asian Americans in his country. This comes after 8 people, mostly Asian women, were killed in a series of attacks in Atlanta.
The United States has witnessed yet another hate crime against minority groups that sparked a nationwide debate over the threats these people are facing in the country. On Wednesday, a white man gunned down 8 people, including 6 Asian women, at spas around Atlanta. The incident raised fears that it might be a new wave of attacks on Asian Americans. A report released by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence said racially motivated extremists pose the most lethal domestic terrorism threats to the U.S. It also warned that threats from domestic violent extremism are metastasizing across the country and could grow in 2021. Hate crimes against minorities in the U.S. have significantly increased over the past years, as former President Donald Trump explicitly favored white people over people of color. Many African Americans and Hispanics have been attacked or killed by white police officers or extremist groups. Asian Americans are in no better condition. They have been grappling with a rise in hate crimes since the coronavirus outbreak, as Trump directly blamed China for the pandemic. Now the question is, how would a country whose foundation has been built on killing the minorities manage to get rid of racism, which has been entrenched in its culture for centuries?
Moving on, Chile registers over 7,000 new COVID-19 cases, breaking its single-day record for infections of the coronavirus. The fast-rising caseload has filled clinical care wards, leaving Chile with nearly 200 beds available for new patients. Following the surge in cases, all of the capital, Santiago, is in strict lockdown this weekend. So far, the virus has claimed more than 22,000 lives out of over 925,000 cases in Chile. Meanwhile, Brazil reported some 2,400 new COVID-19 deaths, raising the total to nearly 293,000. The Brazilian Health Ministry also registered over 79,000 additional confirmed cases of the virus, bringing the overall tally to nearly 12 million. Moving on, arrests are made in Germany as some 20,000 people from across the country gather in the city of Kassel to to protest coronavirus restrictions. Police deployed water cannons and used pepper spray to disperse the protesters who fought back, hitting officers with projectiles. The protests came amid anger over the government's lack of a clear policy to end the coronavirus lockdowns, with vaccination lagging behind countries like the U.S. and the U.K. Meanwhile, similar protests were held in the northern Swiss town of Lissau. There, some 5,000 people rallied to demand an end to anti-COVID measures. The protesters held placards reading "Enough," denouncing what they call the government's use of dictatorial power to impose COVID restrictions. Moving on, thousands of French people have marched in Paris to protest against racism and police violence. The protest was held amid a heavy police presence in the capital. They voiced opposition to a proposed security law known as the Global Security Bill, and slammed it as a violation of their rights. The bill includes an article that would criminalize the publication of images of on-duty police officers. It would also extend police surveillance powers through the use of CCTV and drones. Critics say the move would restrict the filming of police and posting of images to social media, notably to document cases of police brutality. Police have arrested 36 people during anti-lockdown protests in the British capital, London, as thousands rally to demand an end to coronavirus restrictions. The arrests were made as protesters scuffled with officers in Hyde Park in central London. Police say several officers were also injured after demonstrators threw projectiles. Coronavirus restrictions imposed in January ban Londoners from leaving their homes except for a limited number of reasons. Anger is also boiling in the city over police violence during a recent vigil held for a woman kidnapped and murdered by an officer. Police violence led to calls, including by the Liberal Democrat leader in Parliament, for the London police chief to resign. Tensions are running high between Brussels and London over a shortfall in AstraZeneca's COVID-19 vaccine shipments to the EU. European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen has warned that the bloc could halt vaccine exports unless it receives the promised deliveries first. In our news review, we discuss this issue.
It's time for this hour's news review, as the EU has again warned it will ban exports of AstraZeneca COVID-19 vaccines unless the former giant fulfills its supply obligations. Ursula von der Leyen says AstraZeneca has so far delivered only 30% of the 90 million vaccine doses it had promised for the first quarter of the year. Von der Leyen says the EU's contract with AstraZeneca states that vaccines destined for the bloc would be produced in both EU and UK plants. She says Britain has not delivered any doses to the EU, about which the European Commission has complained to the Anglo-Swedish firm. The EU is facing an acute shortage of COVID jabs, while many member states are facing the third wave of the pandemic. Well, I'd like to welcome both my guests for this news review. Out of Brussels, Jerome Hughes, and out of London, Robert Carter. Welcome both of you to the program. Well, let's start it off in Brussels then, Jerome. So tell us what's going on and what's the EU saying and what are they planning on doing with this?
Marcia, I think relations between the EU and the UK are irreparably damaged at this stage. I mean, you had the protracted Brexit negotiations that seemed to go on for a lifetime, and they were very harsh indeed in terms of their tone on many occasions. Now you have the EU effectively suing the UK for alleged breaches of elements of the Brexit agreements, and now you have this whole debacle over the vaccines. And really the larger question here is what will happen in the future. You would have to imagine that there will be zero cooperation in the future between the EU and the UK, perhaps when we have another crisis, because we've had many crises, the refugee crisis, financial crisis. What could the next crisis be, and what level of cooperation will there be between these powers? And so that is a big issue going forward. But right now, I mean, Ursula von der Leyen, you know, earlier this week, she was highlighting that the EU has exported more than 40 million doses of COVID-19 vaccines produced here in the EU, and a quarter of those, so 10 million, have gone to the UK. And she talks about reciprocity and the need for perhaps better cooperation, because they're very annoyed that they're exporting vaccines to a country like the UK that has now vaccinated, inoculated half of the population. And yet here in the EU, we have major problems in terms of having vaccine supply. So a lot of these vaccines are leaving the EU. And it comes down to the fact that the UK, though, is saying, obviously, that, you know, it wants to get the job done, it wants to finish the job. And there's a lot of cynicism here in the EU side as well about the figures that are coming out of the UK, because they're saying that there's just a lack of clarity. There sort of seems to be all this clandestine movement in the background, both here in the EU and in the UK, in terms of what's happening to doses, where they're being produced, where they're being sent to, because we can't get any figures on how many doses have been exported from the UK. And in their defence, Boris Johnson has been using this figure of providing £550 million towards this COVAX initiative, which is supposed to distribute vaccines around the world. But really, people are saying, well, look, that's just money. What we really need are vaccines. And so it's easy to throw money at a problem. And as you mentioned in the introduction, Marcia, the big problem here, of course, is that the elephant in the room is AstraZeneca, because instead of 90 million doses before the end of this month, the firm is only going to deliver 30 million to the EU. So that's a breach of contract, according to the European Commission. And instead of 180 million doses in April, May and June, the company is saying it will only provide 70 million. So really, that's the crux of the problem, is the lack of contracts being fulfilled. And that's what's sort of behind fueling the pressure and the conflict between the EU and the UK.
Okay, well, Robert, tell me about the UK side of things. I mean, what's the British government saying and their justification for the moves that they've been making with this?
Well, the UK has responded quite aggressively, and they have essentially issued their own threats against the European Union over the fact that the UK will be forced to respond to the EU if it persists with this narrative that the UK is holding back on vaccines and essentially engaging in what's been referred to as vaccine nationalism, essentially prioritizing their own people above all others. But the issue of vaccines is getting a lot deeper, because of course you have major Western blocks such as the European Union or the US who are able to produce vaccines, but then there are also many third world countries which are not receiving many vaccines at all, and they don't have the ability to produce them. So what's happening now is a new debate which is being headed by the WHO organization, the World Health Organization, is about, hang on a minute, there are certain countries that are making their own vaccines, prioritizing their own people, as it seems, and then there are other countries which are in major need of vaccines, and they're basically not receiving any. Take the US, for example. They claim to be the greatest superpower on the globe, yet they're practically not exporting any vaccines whatsoever. The UK, another major world superpower, is being accused of holding back vaccines and engaging in vaccine nationalism. So it's obviously there is a massive issue between the EU and the UK that's developing. It's getting worse. Their diplomatic relations are at an all-time low. But at the same time, this issue of vaccine hoarding is a Western issue, and it's developing into such. There are many more, arguably more in need countries, underdeveloped countries, which are basically being ignored completely. The UK and EU do still have the ability to produce their vaccines, even if their turnout is quite low. At least they're actually turning out some vaccines.
Thank you both for being with us. Out of Brussels, that was Jerome Hughes with London, Robert Carter.
That brings us to the end of this edition of World News.
A diverse range of programs. Spirituality. Youth. Eastern Tales. Roundtable discussions. Culture. Politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio.
Could you tell a little about yourself?
I'm Eric Shumanandi from India.
I was born actually in London, England.
I'm a journalist by profession.
I'm 20 years old and I'm a student of first grade. My dad, who taught me the art of
Listeners Special.
In the name of God, the compassionate, the merciful. Salam, dear listeners, and welcome to this week's edition of Listeners Special on this beautiful Sunday, March 21st, 2021. I'm Atef Erfani, hosting this program today. Listeners Special is the Sunday program where your views are presented through emails and letters. So contact us and tell us what you think about our broadcasts. Or if you have any messages for our dear listeners around the world, then record your voice, send it to us, and get your voice heard. Remember, Listeners Special is your program. It's your views that are important. On behalf of IRIB English Radio, congratulate our dear listeners on the occasion of Nowruz and Iranian New Calendar Year 1400. Congratulations! Today, we in Iran are celebrating Nowruz and the first day of the month of Farvardin, 1400 of the Iranian calendar year. As we in Iran are celebrating Nowruz, some of our dear listeners around the world are also celebrating Nowruz, including in Kyrgyzstan, Iraq, Azerbaijan, Tajikistan, Afghanistan, Pakistan, Georgia, India, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Turkey, and some other countries. Nowruz, Iran's New Year celebrations, is a major festivity and an important part of the rich, flourishing culture of the Iranian people. Once again, Nowruz declares the end of winter and heralds the arrival of spring to the inhabitants of this ancient land, the land of Iran. Nowruz represents renewal of close ties between man and nature. Happy Nowruz and the beginning of spring to everyone. Welcome back. This is Listeners Special, and as usual, many of you have taken the trouble of sending us reception reports. These reception reports, dear listeners, are very useful and important to us in IRIB English Radio, especially to our technicians and engineers. These reception reports enable us to provide a better service to our listeners throughout the world. All of you who have sent in a reception report will be receiving a QSL card from us. However, these days, with the outbreak of coronavirus around the world, please don't expect a QSL card from us in IRIB English Radio. As you may know, sending any material on behalf of our radio is temporarily halted due to the pandemic. However, my dear colleagues in IRIB English Radio are preparing and designing eQSL cards for you. And here, I truly appreciate those of our listeners who have kindly sent us reception reports, including Ashraf Ashik from India, Giovanni Seri from Italy, and Saber Jout from Algeria. Ashraf Ashik, Giovanni Seri, and Saber Jout, we want you to know how much we value your support and commitment to IRIB English Radio. And a million thanks to those of our listeners who have kindly sent us letters and emails, which most of them focuses on Nowruz celebrations, which I mentioned some of their names here, and later during the program, I will read their emails and letters, including an email from Olmar Kovic from Sweden. We have an email from Lu Dacheng from China. Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh has sent us an email. Chris Malbo from Canada has also sent us an email. And Harald Seuss from Austria has kindly sent us an email. Dear listeners of Listeners Special, stay with us until the end of the program. I will be back with all these kind messages just in seconds. Welcome back. First of all, we have an email from Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh. Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar, one of our regular listeners, says, Nowruz, the arrival of spring in the Northern Hemisphere, is one of the oldest and most cherished festivals, having been celebrated for at least 3,000 years. The Farsi word Nowruz means new day. Nowruz is one of the oldest festivals in the world. This popular culture and festival is celebrated not only in Iran, but also in Afghanistan, Tajikistan, the Republic of Azerbaijan, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan, Turkey, and Iraq. The festival is more or less celebrated in Georgia, Pakistan, India, and Bangladesh, and many other parts of the world as well. There is a special similarity between the Iranian New Year Nowruz and the Bengali New Year. Spring arrives in Iran and Bangladesh at close intervals. Nowruz is a week of joy and excitement in Iran. In Bangladesh too, fairs are held in the villages on the occasion of Boishakh for a month. I listen very carefully to the special programs on the occasion of Nowruz on IRIB English Radio, and I will definitely enjoy it. I would like to extend my best wishes to the all presenters of IRIB English Radio, the Iranian public, and all listeners from all over the world. Happy Nowruz to all. Happy Nowruz to everyone. I wish you all good health. Salam and greetings to Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar from Bangladesh and all people in your country, Bangladesh. Sultan Mahmoud Sarkar, one of our regular listeners, I was amazed by the information you had about Nowruz celebration in Iran and your country. Of course, it was great. It was such a great email. Many thanks for writing us this email, and many thanks for sharing your information about Nowruz to our dear listeners and to us in IRIB English Radio. Sultan Mahmud Sarkar from Bangladesh, wish you all the best, and we wish you all the best during Nowruz occasion in your country, Bangladesh. And we wish you all the best, and we wish you a very healthy, safe, and prosperous year during this occasion and all the year. Many thanks for writing this email to us, Sultan Mahmud Sarkar from Bangladesh. Write to us soon. Stay safe and healthy. Also from Canada, we have an email from Chris Malboff. Chris Malboff, one of our regular listeners, says, "Dear friends at IRIB English Radio, greetings to all on the occasion of Nowruz and the beginning of the Iranian New Year. May you have good health and joy in the upcoming year." First of all, salam and greetings to you, Chris Malboff from Canada, one of our regular listeners. Chris Malboff, many thanks for your congratulation message on Nowruz and the beginning of Iranian New Year. Have a good time. We wish you all the best. Stay safe and healthy. And for sure, keep in touch with IRIB English Radio. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with other congratulation messages from around the world. Stay with us, please. Welcome back from Sweden. We have an email from Olmar Kuvik. Olmar says, "First of all, I want to send you my thanks for the letter with verification card showing the mausoleum of Sheikh Safiuddin in Ardabil and the postcard with the interior of St. Mary's Church in Tehran received here a few days ago. I'm very happy to have this excellent reply from you, and I have published it on Facebook with much attention from followers. I found the story on the web about this Armenian church and the fact that Iran has given shelter to Armenian refugees during a long time. I also found that the mausoleum and the church are both classed as World Heritage. I take the opportunity to wish you a happy Nowruz. Let us hope this spring will offer us some hope in the battle against the COVID-19 virus, which is making everyone's life difficult. With kind regards from Sweden." Greetings to you, Olmar Kovic from Sweden, one of our regular listeners, and many thanks for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. So you've received a verification card from us showing, as you said, the mausoleum of Sheikh Safiuddin in Ardabil and a postcard with the interior of St. Mary's Church in Tehran. Yes, we have Christian minorities in our country, so we have churches in different parts of our country. That's great. You've enjoyed the souvenirs, and seems you know the Iranian history very well, as you know how we celebrate Nowruz, and Nowruz is celebrated in different parts of the world. Also, many thanks for your congratulation message. We wish you all the best. And you said that different countries celebrate Nowruz. So happy Nowruz and Iranian new calendar year 1400 to all our listeners around the world, especially you, Olmar Kovic from Sweden. Wish you peace, love, joy, and good tidings. Write to us soon, Olmar Kovic from Sweden, and tell us your views about our programs. And from China, we have an email from Lu Dacheng from China. Lu Dacheng from China says, "Dear friends at IRIB English Radio, hello. I'm very happy to know that we are approaching Nowruz holidays in Iran and many other countries. I think it is the same as a spring festival in China, which is the biggest festival in my country. I know about Nowruz and the articles about Iran in Chinese and the programs of IRIB English Radio. I wish Iranian people and all the listeners who celebrate this occasion a happy Nowruz. Stay safe and strong. Salam and greetings to you, Lu Dacheng from China. And accept our warm thanks for writing this email to IRIB English Radio. I think this email belongs to days before Nowruz. Because our dear listener Lu Dacheng says we are approaching Nowruz holidays in Iran, but these days in Iran, at the time I'm reading this email, we are celebrating Nowruz in Iran. Anyway, many thanks for writing this congratulation message to us in IRIB English Radio, Lu Dacheng from China. You mentioned that you in China also celebrate a festival like Nowruz in your country, and that is at the time of spring. I think, yes, we in Iran, like China, celebrate festivals and festivities related to spring, but I think the rituals and traditions are much different. For example, we spread hafts in cloth in our country, but that is much different from what you celebrate in your country. As you said, you have a festival in the time of a spring. Yes, both they are celebrated at the time of a spring, but the rituals and traditions are much different. And we are very happy that you enjoy our programs about Nowruz. And as you said, you know about Nowruz in our programs in IRIB English Radio. We're so happy that you're enjoying them. We wish you, Lu Dacheng from China, and your fellow countrymen a very happy festival in your country. As you said, it's in the time of spring, and wish you all the best. Stay safe and healthy, and write to us soon in the future. Dear listeners, after a short break, I will be back with other emails and letters from around the world. Welcome back. Here we have an email from Harald Seuss from Austria. Harald Seuss is one of our regular listeners who says, "Hi, dear staff of IRIB English Radio. Thank you very much for your kind email. Some more than 3,000 years, the ancient festival of Nowruz has been celebrated. It is, in some respects, similar to our New Year festival. We celebrate the New Year coming in our country and the whole Europe in winter time. We all make a special food for this day, meet family members, and wish together all the best, prosperity, and health. If the time and health situation will get better, it would be of great interest to participate in your Nowruz festival once. I wish you a happy new year. I am a listener of IRIB since 1975. I am interested in different cultures and geography of foreign countries, and I am lucky to have visited some of them. Unfortunately, I have not yet been able to visit Iran, but I hope that I will have the chance to do so. I wish all the best for the future and a successful radio broadcasting in the world and within your country. Salam and greetings to you, Harald Seuss from Austria, one of our regular listeners. And, you know, many thanks for this incredible email. Honestly, I am astounded by the information you had about Nowruz and about Iran. It was great. Incredible. Many thanks. As you said, maybe the time and maybe, as you know, the kind of traditions we do in Nowruz and in your country, in some cases, be similar, for example, regarding the fact that we visit family members, you know, wishing together the best prosperity and health, and making a special food, in some cases, yes, but you celebrate your festival in the winter time, we celebrate it during spring. That's great. And we are honored to have you as our regular and old listener. As you said, you have been listening to IRIB English Radio since 1975. That's many years. And it's an honor. It's a pleasure to have you with us as a listener. And we also hope that you visit Iran very soon in the future, maybe after the coronavirus is controlled around the world. Wish you all the best, Harold Seuss from Austria. Many thanks for writing this great email. And here we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special. Keep in touch and have a good time. Wishing you all the best, we wrap up this week's edition of Listeners Special. Please keep in touch with Listeners Special and have a good time.
Listeners, your opinion is always important to us. We invite you to spend just a few minutes writing us a letter or sending us an email. We'll be glad to hear from all of our listeners who have any questions or comments about any of our programs. Our postal address is IRIB English Service, PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran. You can also send your emails to EnglishRadio@irib.ir. That is one word, EnglishRadio@irib.ir. Please visit our website at www.pasttoday.com/en. Our phone number is 00982122013720. Once again, our phone number is 00982122013720. Our profile is also in Facebook. Our address is www.facebook.com/pasttodayenglish. Thank you all for being with IRIB English Radio.
Debate.
Hello and welcome to Debate. I'm Marzia Hashemi. Thanks so much for being with us. Well, U.S. President Joe Biden has addressed Americans after a surge in attacks against Asians inside of the United States. Now, he said that the U.S. is no place for hate. And that sounds like a great slogan, but if we look at the historic reality, it seems that hatred has been a consistent fiber of life for many minorities in the country.
The United States has witnessed yet another hate crime against minority groups that sparked a nationwide debate over the threats these people are facing in the country. On Wednesday, a white man gunned down 8 people, including 6 Asian women at spas around Atlanta. The incident raised fears that it might be a new wave of attacks on Asian Americans. A report released by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence said racially motivated extremists pose the most lethal domestic terrorism threats to the U.S. It also warned that threats from domestic violent extremism are metastasizing across the country and could grow in 2021. Hate crimes against minorities in the U.S. have significantly increased over the past years, as former President Donald Trump explicitly favored white people over people of color. Many African Americans and Hispanics have been attacked or killed by white police officers or extremist groups. Asian Americans are in no better condition. They have been grappling with a rise in hate crimes since the coronavirus outbreak, as Trump directly blamed China for the pandemic. Now the question is, how would a country whose foundation has been built on killing the minorities manage to get rid of racism, which has been entrenched in its culture for centuries?
I'd like to welcome my guest to the program out of Washington, D.C., senior member of Black Alliance for Peace, Netva Freeman, and professor at CUNY and political commentator, Danny Shum, out of New York. Welcome both of you to the program. Let's start this off in D.C. with Netva. What do you think is actually behind the spike in attacks that we're witnessing right now against Asians?
Well, I think most people understand that it started with a lot of the rhetoric that Donald Trump was having, and people in that of that ilk in terms of the United States, like low level of xenophobic, more the low level of political understanding and analysis, but highly xenophobic dispositions and mentality, and trying to blame, and the U.S. not really taking responsibility, for its role and the spread and proliferation of the pandemic here, and then, you know, Trump making his comments, and then people and other people, not just Trump, but other people, Kung Flu and all those kind of crazy things. But at the same time, we should not make this only about Trump, because I think here the Democrats, the Democratic Party, particularly this new administration, would love to scapegoat Trump and his role in that Trump administration and the rise of xenophobic and right-wing racist phenomenon, or not really a rise in it. It's not really more prominent than it was before, but maybe it's gotten more desperate. But we also shouldn't divorce it from the foreign policy and the angling of the United States, which is very racist foreign policy disposition toward China and Korea, and angling for war, and that in itself comes with its own propaganda. Washington, the Wall Street Journal, and all of them participate in this angling. So when people have low levels of political understanding and they don't understand colonialism and how the global economy works and things like that, then they will often see as their adversaries people that are not like them, and the people who are in the eye in this kind of focus, this lens of attack. And so that's where I would start with that, is that, it's generally the United States capitalist, settler, colonialist system and imperialist government that kind of sets this tone and is an incubator for mm-hmm. such backwards ideas.
Okay. Well, Danny, touching on some of the same points that Netva has made, though, I want your perspective on how much of what we are witnessing do you think relates to what we saw take place during the Trump administration, as Netfa said, it was a, as far as the jargon that was used and the whole atmosphere, is it more that, or in general, that this country basically was built on racism, and there is a great racial divide that is taking place in the U.S. now?
In the words of Malcolm X, you can't have capitalism without racism. And we are fed a steady diet of xenophobic, anti-immigrant, xenophobic miseducation in this country. Unfortunately, these horrific killings in Atlanta do not come as a surprise in a country where, in the words of H. Rap Brown, racism is American as apple pie. After January 6th, with the countdown to inauguration, we were just counting how many incidents, how many high-profile incidents of anti-Asian violence would there be. And as Netfa has laid out in his summation, there's this long history of anti-China, anti-socialist propaganda. We only have to check the front page every day of the Financial Times in London, in the New York Times here, and across this country. So it's not just coming from the right wing. It's coming from both wings of the ruling class. As the competition with China heats up, this is a technological and economic and diplomatic battle. So these headlines, unfortunately, are going to continue to play out, especially among the white working class, who's been fed how many centuries of white supremacy and backwardness.
Well, Netfa, what do you make of Biden's comments that the U.S. is not a country of hate? Because if we look at the U.S.'s terrible record when it comes to dealing, especially with Native and Black Americans, it's deeply rooted in hate. But your overall take on the way this administration has been addressing this issue, do you see it as being hypocritical?
Well, it's absolutely hypocritical, and what it comes at a time where actually this this wing of the ruling class, which is dominated by the Democratic Party and the this Biden-Harris presidency, is really doing its best to, this issue emerges when it's doing its best to play on a crude identity politics that's absent of the class struggles, that's absent of capitalism, and trying to play on, well, Black Lives Matter and other people matter, and that movement that's making them have to address what's being called racial injustice or racial justice has emerged, particularly young people who've seen who have a very internationalist purview, who are open to other peoples, and they're trying to miss, but they want that to stay there, and they don't want like what we just what we talked about here earlier with Danny mentioning, is that the United States and its capitalism is intertwined with racism, and they can't be separated. They need to separate it, and so that's what they're doing. So he has to give pronouncements denouncing what's happening. They want to make sure we don't make the connections of those things with the foreign policy toward like North Korea and China and other places around the world. It's absolutely hypocritical. Not to mention, even if we're talking about police, they have to embrace police in spite of the fact that the overwhelming sentiment against the racial justice against the police and how racist they are as an institution. And so, you know, it's nothing but hypocrisy when he can't tease out all the rest of the interconnections and intersections of this issue.
Well, Danny, in 2020, we saw many people protest against racial inequality. What came about of those demonstrations? Has anything changed?
That's a great question. A lot of window dressing, especially from the Democrats, but institutionally, systematically, what has changed? Segregation and white supremacy and police brutality has not changed. A year ago, when Breonna Taylor was murdered, we're coming up on the one-year anniversary of the brutal torture and assassination of George Floyd. But the people continue to resist, proving how true the statement is that repression breeds resistance, and only resistance can bring us our freedom. Today, across the country, as we speak, there are demonstrations against racism, against anti
Asian hatred and hate crimes. So really, it's only the people in motion with these different anti-racist and anti-imperialist organizations who can usher in a new day. It's not going to be a Joe Biden or a Kamala Harris or any other white knight from their pedestal that's going to cause any real systematic change. So I think it's correct to be in the streets, to stand with our Asian sisters and brothers across this country at this crucial moment, at this tragic historical moment.
Well, Nefta, listen to what Danny just said. Let's talk about that possibility, talking about a rising resistance. When we look at, because you pointed out and talked about the way the U.S. is handling its foreign policy and the way it has demonized, for example, China or North Korea, and of course the way the media, the mainstream media, also promotes what the state is basically telling them. So how likely is it that we will get to that point of this rising resistance, this, if you want to say, woke group that really can make that change that's necessary?
It's interesting that you use the term woke, because the Wall Street Journal rather just had put out a thing using the term sort of more disparagingly, is the way of disparaging the xenophobia and racism and whatnot. But I think one of the things, and this is where the media is very key to the answering into your question, is that it is quite likely. One of the things, in spite of all of the megaphone, you know, they're using to put out their propaganda and their spin, is that they're not reporting on, for example, Danny mentioned a lot of the demonstrations that are going on. If we go into those demonstrations, particularly if you look at people's journalism and people's coverage, so to speak, that the internet has on social media and whatnot, we can see a lot of solidarity with these young people across race lines, quote unquote race lines, if you will, but also recognizing the solutions that Danny talked about, that it's not within the state, and then denouncing the police. I saw one, a young woman, Asian woman, who was talking about having a discussion with her mother about the role of the police, and them thinking, well, the hate crimes that are emerging against Asians in the United States means that we have to embrace the police. And she was explaining to her mother, no, the police don't keep us safe. And then she talked about the racist policies and actions and implementation of police against African people, black people in this country. And so, and you know, just if you look, if you're on the ground among the people, you can see that there's an emerging young generation that sees through this stuff. We just don't get it, doesn't get reported. As long as we're also using mobilizations to engage in organization with political education, then it's inevitable. This system is crumbling, and the contradiction of the system cannot be hidden. I mean, they can do a good job of making it look like it's hidden, but it's not really hidden from the people who have to face the consequences of it.
Well, Danny, in a report released by the Office of the Director of National Intelligence, it says the biggest threat to the United States is racially motivated domestic terrorism. Your take on this assessment?
Yeah, no question. I mean, even the FBI in the state has recognized this, yet here we have this assassin, this racist murderer, killed 8 people, and the police apprehend him peacefully. He doesn't have a scratch on him. So we see, whether it's Dylan Roof or this other young man, these are deeply sick individuals, infected with how many decades and centuries of the white supremacy, and then the police handle them with kids' gloves. I think it's important to continue to take these big steps back and contextualize internationally how fearful this decaying empire is of China, of China's $1 trillion investment in other countries across Latin America, the new accords with Australia, with Japan, with other Asian powers. We remember Obama's pivot to Asia, so quote-unquote away from the war on terrorism. So it's within this context that we see these attacks on China, as if China were somehow our existential threat here in New York City and D.C. and beyond, when it's probably the coronavirus, lack of healthcare,